I want to welcome to the program now a regular on the program, State Representative Chip Brown joins us. Representative, I assume you're up in Montgomery today, right?
I am, Jeff. We're up. We have budget hearings this week. I'm up here, taking part of that.
So the early part of these budget hearings, when I talked to Steve Klaus, last week it was, getting some of this budget stuff squared away and maybe really trying to tackle that early on in this legislative session. That sounded like that was his goal. Any indication, just based on these the early stages of these hearings, that is going to be something that seems like it's doable?
I think so. I think that's the plan. I had a conversation this morning with some of the leadership, and I know we're looking at pushing, the budgets and all to try to get those out of the way early and try to get them upstairs to the Senate, and then, let them do their thing in the Senate and then come back down. And, last year, because of COVID, we did them later in the year because we had two budgets. We had the one budget, the general fund, and the education trust fund budget that had certain numbers. And then when we came back in May, we passed amended budgets basically, and that were more conservative. And, from a fiscal standpoint, Alabama, we're one of the top five states in the country as far as being in good financial shape. We're not looking at proration. We've been conservative, and that's good, because there's a lot of states right now, because of the COVID issue, they're in a lot of financial trouble.
Right, and I guess that whenever I have these guys on, these people, the veterans, if you will, that have served in the legislature, while they'll tell you they really changed the culture of the legislature when they took over in 2010 from Democrats and started implementing these different ways of doing the budget process and putting money aside. And now that this is probably, there's been some others along the way, obviously the, bumps in the road, but this probably the biggest one since then, the state's been able to weather the storm.
Yeah, that's right. If you think back in the late 90s and early parts of 2000, there were several years where we'd have proration, our finances were not in good shape. And so when the Republicans took over in 2010, you're right, they implemented a lot of changes that that saved a lot of money and created reserve accounts. And that's good. It's the way you should run your household, and it's definitely the way you should run your state.
Let's talk about what's going to happen today, at least according to Todd Stacey's newsletter, the budget hearings. You hear from Cam Ward, now the director of the Pardons and Paroles, Jeff Dunn from the ADOC. I guess the question everybody is going to be wondering about, what's next for Alabama's prison system? Does that seem like a fair statement?
Yeah, that's correct. We've got the federal action wanting to come in, and of course the governor has a plan, and we're looking at different options. It's a complicated issue, and it's one that we have to take care of. You can't put a Band-Aid on it. That's what Alabama's done for years. It's just basically kick the can down the road, and then we're back in the same situation that we find ourselves in every few years, where the federal government is telling the state that we don't have enough beds and we have inhumane conditions in the prisons. And so that what you don't want is a federal takeover. And especially with the current administration in Washington, a federal takeover means mass releases, and that's what you don't want. So right now, that's definitely one of the biggest issues facing the state, is how to handle our prison population.
We talk a lot about it on this show, about handling prisons, and it's never been like no one runs, at least on the Republican side, on I'm going to make Alabama's, or I'm going to make our prison system better. It's always been kind of down on the list of priorities. But in this era of we need to, really, really take seriously law and order and back the blue, the one component you're going to have is a functioning prison system for public safety. It doesn't seem to me, and maybe I'm off on this, but it doesn't seem like it's a the political third rail that it once was, just given the circumstances right now.
Well, that's correct. I mean, everybody realizes that you have to have, there's always going to be bad people, and there's always going to be people that deserve to go to prison. And so you're always going to have a place to put them. And that's just part of society. I mean, always has been and always will be. And so I think that, you know, we have to understand that you have to spend the funds to have prisons that hold, you know, the population of criminals. And you got to do it in such a way that the federal government basically dictates the way that we run our prisons. So it just has to, you have to do it.
Yeah, I mean, and now you really got to emphasize this point. I think look at, like you mentioned, the mass releases. Look at California, and I think they're still struggling through some of that, where they just released at the behest of the federal government inmates on the streets, not really ready to be back in society. It created all kinds of problems. Not that that's going to happen here in Alabama, but in a worst case scenario, if you don't take the situation seriously, it could very well happen.
Well, that's right. And that is the big fear with the federal government, because that's usually what happens, is they, when they come over and take over your prison system, that to free up beds, that's exactly what they do. They come in and they look down the list and they say, okay, this guy that has a 20-year sentence that served 4 years, okay, release him, release this guy that's in there for murder, but he served, you know, 2 years of his sentence, so we got to free up that bed. He's gone. And they release him back into society. And when you talk about a revolving door, that's a true revolving door right there. And that's scary, because you're putting people back on the streets that have no business being back on the streets. And that's what we don't want to happen in Alabama.
Right. We don't want, you gotta, and this is probably something that it's more to it than just beds and new prison construction. You gotta have that infrastructure in place to get folks, if they are released out back into the world, at what point are they ready for that? And I think that gets to, it seems, you know, maybe something we think is kind of, it doesn't seem like something you talk about as a Republican that much, but getting the skills, the training, all the vocational stuff or whatever it may be, rehabilitation, mental health, all those components, and you put them into a more of a comprehensive look at, and then just, we got to build a new facility to get back in compliance with the Seventh Amendment.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's an important component of it, because, I think people understand now that if you just, everybody wants to be tough on crime, and I want to be tough on crime, but you can't just warehouse people. We found that a lot of times a low level, someone that's picked up for, let's say, a nonviolent selling marijuana, let's say, that if they're sent to home and prison with a bunch of murderers, more than likely when they get out, they're going to be hardened criminals. So there needs to be separate facilities for them to go to. And then while you're in prison, there needs to be something where you're developing a skill set so that you come out, you can be a productive member of society and not learning while you're in prison how to be a better criminal. And we found across the country that that's the number one breeding ground for jihadists. I mean, the jihadists are in our prisons. We don't like to talk about that, but they are. They're in prisons and they're recruiting, and that's a hotbed for extremist activity. And so we have to provide the opportunity for people that are incarcerated, that when they get out of prison, they have some type of skill set that they can return and be a better citizen and be a productive member of society in Alabama.
Joined by State Representative Chip Brown here on the program. Let's get to your bill here, the sexual assault survivors' bill of rights. Talk about that. Just to fill our audience in, what you're trying to accomplish here.
Well, I look at that as it's a complementary bill to, you know, I have a NIAS law that a NIAS law is a comprehensive criminal bond reform And what Anaya's law says is basically that right now, under Alabama law, the only time you can be denied bond is if you're charged with capital murder. And what Anaya's law does is that it says that if you're charged with a violent Class A felony, the district attorney can request that you be held without bond if you're considered an imminent threat to society, to yourself, or a flight risk. And they'd hold an evidentiary hearing, and the judge could determine whether you'd be held without bond. And so that would, it's named after Nia Blanchard, who was sexually assaulted and murdered by an individual that was out on bond for a kidnapping, attempted murder, and a robbery of a 77-year-old man. When the police pulled him over, he had a 77-year-old man in the vehicle, but he was released on bond because he wasn't charged with capital murder. And so this bill, the Sexual Assault Victims Bill of Rights, I think is kind of complementary of that. And what that says is that if you are a sexual assault victim, that when you go to get a rape kit, you get an exam at the hospital, you're never going to be charged for that. And that helps bring sexual assault victims forward because they know that there's not going to be a cost to get an exam. But then also evidence, if you're a minor, that evidence would have to be kept for until you're 40. And then they send you a letter and you can request to be kept for 20 more years. And then as an adult, it has to be kept for 20 years. And they send you a letter notifying you that your 20 years is up. And then you can request to be held for 20 more years. And also you have to notify the victims of any DNA matches and that sort of thing. And that's important because we've got to keep that evidence to help solve cold cases and sexual assault victims, and it'll help find some dangerous predators. So that is a bill that I feel very passionate about, and I think they're two very important bills. We got to get past this session.
What does that look like getting more through? I think you and your colleagues all got to have the bills they want to get through under COVID. How optimistic are you that, beyond the budgets, beyond, I guess, the economic development and the taxation and the liability protection, that you're going to be able to tackle some of these important bills beyond, I guess, the third week you got to take off and then reevaluate? Do you think the legislature is going to be able to get a lot done?
I'm hopeful. I mean, I want to work. I know, my colleagues that I talk to, they all have, their own priorities, and they want to go to work after last year where, of course, COVID cut short. And you have situations like Anaya's law that it passed the House unanimously and had passed the Senate Judiciary Committee unanimously and was supposed to be on the floor of the Senate, and then we didn't come back because of COVID. So, last year I had passed 5 bills out of the House that were waiting on the Senate, and then COVID shut them all down. So I know the desire is there to work, and the desire is to get things done for your district and for the state. And I do like the fact that we're looking at the budgets early, and we're taking, going to tackle some of these bigger issues early on that I think will, free up space to deal with other issues in the state. So I'm optimistic about it. You never know what the future holds, but I feel good about it. I really do. I'm hopeful.
What does it look like up there around Montgomery with COVID? Last time I was up there, it's kind of a ghost town, but, everything had been shut down. But now, does it seem like things are in place to really be able to function under these circumstances?
Well, from a city standpoint, it's a lot of restaurants are closed. A lot of things that were open last year are now shuttered, and it's kind of sad, to be honest with you. Yesterday, a couple of us went to try to go have lunch, and all the restaurants around the Capitol are pretty much closed now. They've just gone out of business. And so from that standpoint, it's definitely changed. We're looking at, in the legislature, we're looking at some people will be on the floor of the House voting, and then we've purchased tablets to allow people in the gallery. Some members will be in the gallery, and some will be in a spillover room. But you can vote on the tablet, and we'll have closed circuit TV and microphones, and it's just going to be a different situation. I don't know how well it's going to work, but I know they're working hard on it. They were testing the system yesterday.
Well, best of luck to y'all in the coming days, and we'll look forward to talking to you more about as the session gets underway. So, thank you for coming on today.
Hey, thank you, Jeff. I really appreciate it. You have a great day.
You do the same. Stay with Chip Brown here on the line.